Hello and welcome to Movies, Murder and Mayhem.
The true crime, the true horror and the true stories behind our favourite horror movies.
And some of our not so favourite horror
and
films.
I'm
Egrain.
And I'm Ruby.
And today we are, for the very first time ever on this podcast, recording in person.
We're in the, I can touch her.
We can touch consensually.
Oh. It's very exciting. It's so nice to see you in person. It's been a while.
It has. October. No, we've seen each other. I don't know.
No, I actually don't. Well, have we seen? We might have seen each other out and about, but the last time you were over here, it was
October.
Yeah, because it was before that show that got cancelled.
Yeah, and you were pretending to kill me.
You were going
to
be my corpse.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh, what fun we have. Good times.
Good times.
Yeah, that's a shame. We should definitely see if we can hoosh that back together at some point. I would like to do that number again.
We'll just record it and put it out on the internet for people to see.
Yeah.
Oh, we can put it up as like a faux snuff film. Oh, sorry, I've been watching August Underground this week.
So. Oh, I see, okay.
Yeah, I don't know if you've seen August Underground.
I have not, but I know it by reputation.
Yeah, I would not recommend it.
No? Okay.
Well, like, unless you're into faux snuff films.
Faux snuff films? I mean, yeah. No, not really.
So I was watching, like, August Underground because I'm on a panel at the weekend. And you'd think I would remember what the panel was called. It's like Extreme Movies and Visceral Pleasure with Kelly from Spinsters of Horror. And so I'm on three panels because I've just decided to take over the whole thing.
What event? Where can one find these panels?
This is online, so I will definitely share it on our media. But yeah, so I'm talking about cannibalism for one panel.
I saw that one posted, yeah. All right.
And then one about August Underground trilogy, mm-hmm. And then another one about French Extremity.
Amazing. That sounds really interesting.
It is. It's just a lot of movies watching that are really disturbing.
Just very intense. But you like that, though.
I do. And then I watch the Gilmore Girls afterwards.
And then, yeah. Because, yeah, it must be, everything must be leveled out.
Yeah,
if you're going to watch a lot of extreme films, the bit of Gilmore Girls helps out.
Exactly.
Should probably apologize in advance because I have several animals wandering around and the cat might just walk across your keyboard. Just do be aware.
Well, it's currently sitting on my notes, so
very helpful. I'll go first though, that'll help.
Yes, let's start then.
Yeah, so this week I wanted to tell you the story of Robert the Doll, because God knows I love me a spooky doll.
You are the doll lady.
I am the doll lady. Far too many reels on my Instagram of dolls, creepy dolls that I found in the wild. I haven't found any recently though, but I do. There's a friend of mine lives in the UK. She lives in Brighton, and there's some really good secondhand shops over there. And like every now and then, like a couple of times a month, I'll just get a video of a terrifying doll.
I'm gonna gift you a doll for your wedding.
I mean, that's not really a wedding gift. That's just a me gift. Poor Jonathan. Yeah. He'd just be like, Why does this happen to me?
I'm going to gift it to you and I want you to open it at your wedding.
Okay.
Okay.
Okay, perfect. So how familiar are you with Robert the Doll?
I know what he looks like,
mm-hmm.
But I don't know the actual story.
Okay.
I guess because he's always been overshadowed by Annabelle.
He has been overshadowed by Annabelle. And I was looking at, I didn't watch it for the purposes of this because I was like, that looks bad. I didn't actually watch the Robert the Doll movie.
Mm-hmm.
But like the version in the film is much more kind of like Annabelle. It's that very sculpted, creepy face. Mm-hmm. I think the real Robert looks way more terrifying.
So it's like a rag doll, isn't it?
He's kind of like a rag doll. He's actually a Steiff doll. So I do have a genuine interest in doll history. It's very interesting. The different kind. I will talk to people about the different kind of bisque heads that you can find on dolls of a certain vintage. All right, the ones with teeth are the worst. Not real teeth, but like they're smiling and they have like little molded teeth, and I hate them. I hate them so much.
I have. They're called Fugglies, and they're like teddy bears with what looks like real teeth.
I love those. Yeah, I think they're very cute. Yeah, but they're like purposefully.
Yeah,
but Steiff is actually the company, it's a German company that made the original teddy bear. So like what we think of as like the traditional teddy bear with like jointed arms and legs, that was a Steiff design. So they're like a very old, very popular stuffed toy manufacturers. Mm-hmm. So Robert the Doll was, he's like 3 foot tall. He's like quite large.
Okay.
He's like child sized.
Yeah.
And he was, but he wasn't actually a like a retail model. We think the people who have looked into this way more than me, and that I just wrote what they looked at. I just copied their research. They think that he was from like a window display or something like that. And he ended up, it was brought over to America, to Florida, by the grandfather of a man called, or boy at the time, Robert Eugene Otto, known as Gene. Mm-hmm. And was given to Gene as a present. And like the little sailor outfit that he is in, it was probably belonged to Gene at some point, as did the little stuffed dog toy that Robert has. I love that the toy has its own toys. We'll get to that. We'll get to that.
Is the toys haunted?
I don't know. We haven't heard anything about the dog. I don't even know what the dog's name is, which I think is a flaw in a lot of the research that I've been looking at. Okay. Please correct this if anyone is interested. So he's made of fabric and he's stuffed with like wood wool, which I found out today is also called Excelsior. I was like, that's fun. So it's like, you know, there's really long wood shavings that are kind of all coiled up. Like, that's basically what he's...
That's not very comfortable to cuddle.
Well, they're quite... Like, he's quite soft. And he's got these little sort of, like, safety eyes. These, like, little button eyes. I think he looks fucking terrifying because his fabric covering has, like, degraded over the years. I'm just gonna... It's really nice to be able to just show you pictures now. And be like, yeah.
Yeah, I don't like it.
Don't like it?
No, I don't like it.
He's not, Yeah, but then, like, and then the one that they did for the film is, like, this incredibly malevolent sort of carved face.
Yeah.
I think the real one is creepier.
I mean, if we're talking about, like, real possession, I think I'd be far more creeped out by a ragdoll rather than, like, if you looked at that film Robert doll, you'd go, that's possessed.
That's, yeah. Whereas... But, like, that's, like, if someone makes a doll and gives it to me and it's, like, you know, like, Living Dead doll or something, and it's clearly made to look a bit creepy.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, that's fine. But, like, it's much more innocuous. Or when they're much more innocuous, it's way creepier. When they look like someone has clearly made these to be... The cat is... Sorry, is headbutting the microphone. So we'll see how that sounds later. Anyway. So, yeah. So he's made from Excelsior and fabric. And as I said, he was given to Gene as a present, and Gene named him after himself because Gene's first name was Robert, so the doll was called Robert. Okay. They dressed him up as his own clothes, and he was a cherished friend, childhood friend, until shit started going a little bit spooky.
I just thought to say, treasured childhood friend until we told him to do things.
So depending on the source that you look at, I mean, a lot of this is very wishy-washy. Like, I couldn't find, you know, obviously who owned him and some of the general legends around him is relatively straightforward, but there's a lot of people saying stuff happened and other people disagree, and there's not a lot of like coordinating sort of primary sources about it. But you know, the one that kind of came up quite often was a story about the first sign of him something being wrong.
Okay.
Was that one night Gene was in bed and apparently he woke up to find Robert sitting at the end of his bed staring at him. And then his parents heard Robert screaming, or Gene screaming, sorry. Mm-hmm. And they tried to get in, but the door was locked. And eventually they got in and like all of the furniture was overturned. The room was like trashed. The doll was on the bed and like Gene was curled up in the corner.
Yeah.
Like the doll did it. The doll done did the deed. But of course, I think as many parents would have thought, they were just like, our kid is just acting out and blaming the doll. So then like a bunch of stuff would happen. Like stuff would be broken or whatever. And he'd be like, Robert did it. The doll did it. And this kept happening. But then what started happening was they would start hearing Robert or Gene talking to the doll, which is fine, kids. But then they would start hearing a voice talking back.
And it wasn't Gene putting
on. And it wasn't. Voice. Well, it's a completely different voice. They also apparently members of the family. So Gene was the youngest of four kids.
Mm-hmm.
So this is from the parents and from the siblings. Apparently they reported seeing the expression on the doll's face change. Now, I don't know how that's physically possible based on the structure of his face. I think he kind of has painted on eyebrows, so it's possible that they moved. Apparently sounds of Robert giggling and like they would like turn and see him like scuttling up the stairs behind them, which is like terrifying.
Yeah.
That's legit. This is so weird. Sorry, more cat stuff. Like, can you imagine you're just like doing the dishes and you turn around and there's this like fucking doll in a sailor suit just like all fours like, ah.
Would you not just like kick it?
Oh my god. Burn oh it. Yeah. Drop kick it into the fucking stratosphere. Yeah. Kill it, burn it with fire. But yeah, anyway. So obviously all this was happening and the family were like, maybe the doll's bored. So they put him in this attic room called the turret room.
Yeah.
But apparently they furnished it and like gave the doll like furniture and toys to play with so he wouldn't get bored and locked him in.
Okay.
Yeah, I know. Madness. So anyway, he was locked up there, but like apparently people passing on the street would like see him in windows and stuff.
Oh my god. That's so creepy.
I know, awful. But he was locked in the turret room. That's where he left. And apparently you could like you'd hear him walking.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. So I'm like, oh no. Oh no. But Gene grew up, he moved away, he got married, his parents passed away, and he moved back into the Key West house, known as the artist's house, with his wife Anne. And he'd actually become a respected artist at this point. So, but apparently his love of Robert had not waned in his adult years. So he had taken Robert out and he sat on this rocking chair in Jean's old bedroom.
Mm-hmm.
But Anne did not like the doll because she was a sane human.
I was about to say. Yeah. Like, if your husband is like, I still have the love for my childhood doll, you'd be like,
I know, I mean, like, I think, like, that's the way it's often kind of described. I mean, I think maybe the reality of it was probably like, oh, like, this is my old childhood doll, I'll just stick him in a chair, like, how cool. But I can also agree with her being very discomforted by this creature. But yeah, so Anne didn't like him, was like, can you put that fucking thing back in the attic? Basically, it's like, I don't like it. Weirding me out.
So did he put it on a chair in their bedroom? Because that would have been like...
No, I think it was in his old room.
Okay.
Because apparently he liked to be able to watch it window.
So he was a nosy neighbour.
He was a nosy neighbour. So anyway, Gene conceded and locked him back up in the attic. But apparently the doll was not happy and used to disrupt their like social gatherings because they would have people over. It's like when visitors came to the home, they would hear footsteps in the attic. They would hear the sound of something pacing back and forth and devilish giggling. Neighborhood children reported seeing Robert watching them from windows in the upstairs bedroom and told accounts of the doll actually mocking them as they walked to school, which is clearly just children making shit up. Clearly. When Gene heard about all of this, he immediately went to investigate, knowing that he'd locked Robert in the attic and there was no way he could be sitting by the window. But apparently when he went to his old childhood bedroom, to his shock, Robert was there sitting in the rocking chair. What is it with dolls and rocking chairs?
Maybe they just have like a sensory thing.
Maybe they just like it.
Yeah. They just like the rocking motion.
Apparently this went on for a while. Gene would keep locking him back in the attic only to find him back down in the bedroom. This just went on for eternity, apparently.
Why eventually did they not Gene just chuck these things out?
Well, here's the thing, right? So Gene died in 1974. Anne did not get rid of the doll. She kept it. I think he'd been willed to her in Gene's will. And she obviously didn't want to like disrespect her husband's wishes by chucking it out. But apparently she did put him in a trunk. It was like in a fucking box with you.
I'm sorry, like I don't mean to be disrespectful, but your husband's dead.
Like, I mean, I agree.
You know, when you're in a house with a creepy ass doll, I don't give a crap what my husband's death wishes are. Like.
Now, here's another weird thing though, right? So after Anne's death, the Eaton Street home was sold to a woman called Myrtle Reuter. Mm-hmm. Apparently, it was in the deed of sale that Robert was to be kept in the house.
No.
Yes, and she kept him there for 20 motherfucking years.
What is wrong with these people? I don't know. Like to victim blame, but they're definitely bringing it on themselves.
Seriously, right? So, but eventually she donated him to where he now lives, which is in the New Martello Museum, I think. Yeah, the East Martello Museum in Key West. So he's still in Key West. Just chilling in a glass box, like most haunted dolls. There are a few, he's in a glass case. Apparently this does not stop him from inflicting fear on visitors and staff alike. It said that you have to ask his permission to take a photo, and there's loads of, like, in his display case, there's loads of letters on the back wall. Yeah. Apparently they're from people who took a photo without his permission and then something horrible happened. So they had to write a letter to apologize, which is very funny.
Yeah.
But also apparently people leave him gifts, like flowers and toys and candy and joints. Apparently this is a thing that they find sometimes left in his case, which I think is very funny.
Yeah, Robert's a stoner.
Yeah. There are a few things that I found reported in like one or two places, but they are of questionable origin. Like one is that a new owner moved into the house and their 10-year-old daughter also kind of became obsessed with Robert and was like, this is my new best friend. And then the same kinds of things happened, but I can't find any direct source for that one.
Yeah.
And then the other one is that, so the family did have a Bahamian maid that worked in their house. And one of the things is that apparently the mother, Jean's mother, Minnie, was very like abusive to her staff, her household staff. And the idea is that this Bahamian servant put a curse on the doll and like summoned a demon to possess it as revenge. Mm-hmm. And I was like, I think that is hella racist.
A little bit.
That just seems, because like again there's like no reference to that in a lot of the original stories. This is something that's come up later. Like I think they did have Bahamian staff because I think it was his mum, Jean's mum, was like, she grew up in the, like, she's of English descent, but she grew up in the Bahamas, so I'd imagine there might have been some household staff transferring there. And like obviously it was the early 1900s. I'm sure they were not treated well remotely. But that being said, the idea that they put a fucking voodoo curse on a doll as revenge is kind of a pretty racist theory, I think.
That, I mean, I find this whole thing fascinating.
Just the idea of haunted dolls?
Yeah, because I'm like, well, like, you know how sometimes in the Victorian times they put pieces of the child, not like pieces, like their hair into the doll? And I'm like,
well, they used to make Victorian dolls, sometimes they would make dolls with like the full head of hair would be from the child's hair.
Like if they died or
if no, they just got a haircut. Just they got the haircut, yeah. Oh, okay. They just thought it was a nice idea. It's weird.
Yeah, like, and then I'm kind of like, okay, I can understand perhaps the haunting of that if the child dies or et cetera, et cetera, whatever. But just like a random rag doll being like, now it's haunted.
Now it's haunted. Yeah, I think it was probably something to do with the fact that I reckon there was just like, obviously he's kind of unnerving looking. Like there is, it's not Uncanny Valley because he doesn't look like a human, but it's like, it's weird. And then the fact that his like his fabric is kind of degraded and stuff as well, he looks a bit like weird and pock-faced. But I think it's this idea that like a grown man just really liked his doll and they were like, the only explanation is possession. I think that's it. I think instead of someone being like, maybe he's just nostalgic and he's an artist, artists are kind of weirdos and he just likes his doll. And like, he was probably just a bit of a shit of a child, you know?
Yeah.
Doll did it.
Yeah.
Like, I think they were like, the only logical possession for this is, or explanation for this is possession, because no way could a grown man like still like a doll. I don't know. Toxic masculinity strikes again.
And also, like, people going and taking his picture and then having bad things happen to them. Like, bad things happen to people.
Oh, yeah. Bad things. Like yeah. I mean, you'll always, like, we love finding patterns. Like, that's part of our, like, brain makeup. It's like that thing of, like, you know, you, like, you step on a crack in the pavement and suddenly you trip. And you're like, ah, there's one thing causing, you know, correlation does not always equal causation. But, you know, isn't it always nice to have an excuse instead of like, I was just clumsy. I was like, it's because I walked under a ladder.
Yeah.
Or, you know, something, I broke a mirror, whatever the thing is. I you know, I suspect it's something to do with that, but I don't know. I only have a degree in arts. I am not the person to be asking.
No. I would like to visit Robert the Doll once there.
Yeah, he can go on our list. We would have to go to Florida though.
Yeah.
It's the Keys though. We could have a nice relaxing time. Do that bit at the end.
Yeah.
Like Robert the Doll and cocktails on the beach.
And both die mysterious deaths.
We'll ask his permission. We'll ask his permission. I'm seeing if we can find like a picture of him with all his notes. Yeah. So like if you see there.
Oh yeah.
So like all the notes up the back. So these are all the letters that have been sent to Robert.
See, I find that dog more disconcerting.
The dog is dog terrifying. Looks petrified. The dog looks like an Adventure Time character, actually. Something about the way his eyes are.
Wouldn't it be hilarious if it actually turned out just to be the dog?
Everyone thought it was Robert, but it was the dog all along. It's so, I don't like this picture of someone gently cradling Robert.
That's asking for trouble.
That really is asking for trouble. There are, if you go on YouTube, there are some great like podcasts and videos about Robert. There is one that is an interview with the doll, which is so funny.
How does that work?
I mean, not at all, really, is the short answer. But it's very, very funny. And the people who run the museum now, like, I am all for a little bit of, you know, wonder in the world. And, like, I don't think that I know everything that, that creation could possibly have put in front of us, you know? I do believe there are things out there that we do not understand and we cannot see. That being said, when you just see all these grown men walking around this fucking doll and being like, yeah, man, I can feel the malevolence. And you're like, okay, just go have another edible and calm the fuck down. Like, you know, I like, I get, it's a bit of fun. It is. Yeah. I don't want to shit on them too much, but at the same time, we're like, yeah. I wonder if you go in there and you're just like, I can't feel fucking shit. You're just like, it's...
Yeah, maybe you do have to be high to, to enjoy the full experience of Robot the Doll. Have you seen the movies?
I haven't. Well, me no, either. I think I've seen the first one, but apparently Robert the Doll is the original inspiration for Chucky as well.
Yeah, I was going to ask that. It seems very Chucky.
Yeah.
Trying to navigate a cat's butt, not sitting on a laptop.
Oh god, sorry, I'm just looking at various different. I hate this one. What's this? I don't like that.
It's like a cosplay.
It's like, yeah, weird.
Very creepy.
Cosplay, I don't like that. Okay, so much so much to dislike here. Oh, just so much.
Has he become a queer icon?
But yeah, there is, I don't know if it is it is straight up, because I think the concept of a haunted doll is not.
Yeah.
I mean, they like to, I know the movies like to play on the, like, before Chucky, before Annabelle, before there was, you know, there was Robert. Yeah. It's all this kind of, he's like the original haunted doll. But like, this is not a new concept. No. So I don't know if the creators of Chucky took it directly from him, but like, you know, he's been knocking around for, he's 111 years old now.
Oh wow.
Yeah, he's still trucking, so
bless him. Okay, well, that was very interesting.
Thank you.
I will now be very wary of ragdolls of all forms.
Of all forms, yeah.
Yeah, not just Raggedy Ann dolls.
No, all dolls are to be mistrusted. Don't. Just keep an eye on them. Just scuttling up the stairs behind you.
We just need, like, especially because it's quite thingy because of the time, we just now need a haunted Barbie.
Yes. Haunted Barbie. That'd be great. Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, Barbie was originally based on an adult themed doll. Is that Barbie was designed after the original creator of Barbie saw a doll in Germany called Diddy Lily. She was an adult entertainment star.
Of course.
And history of dolls is always very interesting. There's a lot of like interesting sociological stuff around the history of toys in general, which I always find fascinating. It's worth looking into. Yeah. Ghosts aside.
Okay, so just to bring it down, that's what I do best.
Bring down the tone.
Just to bring down the tone.
Hit me with those bummer stories.
So this month I am doing the story of Ivor Milat.
I'm familiar with this. So.
Who is the inspiration behind the 2005 Australian horror film Wolf Creek, directed and written by Greg McLean. It stars John Jarrett as Mick Taylor, a sadistic serial killer who captures and hunts three backpackers in the Australian outback. So, have you ever seen Wolf Creek?
I have.
It's messed up.
It's really fucking messed up, yeah.
It came out around the time of, like, the torture porn kind of...
Yeah, there's, like, Hostel and the first Saw movies and, yeah.
And for some reason it just gained some, like, extreme notoriety.
I mean, it is quite extreme. Even for that genre, it's quite... And I think because it was a bit more overtly based on real events, that kind of gave it a bit more spice, a bit more edge.
So Ivor Milat was more commonly known as the Backpacker Murderer because apparently they couldn't come up with a better nickname for him.
Seriously. Get your shit together, Australian media.
God damn it, Australia. So Milat abducted, tortured and murdered at least seven confirmed victims in New South Wales between 1989 and 1992, although he is suspected of being guilty of many more unsolved murders. His modus operandi would be he'd approach backpackers on the Hume Highway, offering them lifts around New South Wales, and he would then take his victims to Belangolo State Forest, where he would incapacitate them and then kill them. Funny story, so I met my sister in Italy and she's from Australia, and she said that she went to see one of her friends and they took her to a lovely forest.
Oh no.
And afterwards were like, so this is Belangolo State Forest where Ivor Milat killed everybody.
Oh my god.
And my sister was like,
yeah.
Because that's always fun. Mm-hmm. So Ivan Robert Marco Milat was born on the 27th of December. He was the fifth of 14 children to Catholic parents, obviously.
Yep.
Because who's having 14 children?
Yeah, story checks out.
Yes, Catholics. And the Malat family lived in absolute poverty on a rural farm before relocating to Liverpool, which is a suburb of Sydney. The Malat father was an aggressive drunk, and the Malat brothers were known to local authorities due to their penchant.
Penchant.
I want to say penchant.
I know.
But then it's like penchant.
Penchant.
Penchant. For carrying around and using knives and firearms. Because they didn't have haunted dolls to play with.
No. If only they'd had a haunted doll, they might
have. Right?
They might have turned out a respected artist.
Yeah. Even from a young age, Ivan's siblings would describe him as antisocial and displaying tendencies of psychopathic behaviour. He would attack animals with machetes, which would get him sent to a residential school at 13. At 17, he was sent to juvie for theft, sent to jail at 19 for being involved in a break-in. And then for the next 5 years, he was arrested and sentenced for breaking and entering, stealing cars and theft. So there's four animals.
Yeah, God.
Cover your ears, but,
like,
Freddy.
Also, yeah. But also, like, the fact that, like, his siblings, who were notorious for being violent and carrying around weapons, were like, that guy's such a psychopath. You're just like, yeah, when those people are like, this guy is, you need to watch him, you should be like, fucking alarm bells ringing.
Yeah. On the 7th of April 1971, Malat abducted two female hitchhikers from Liverpool train station and held them at knife point. He raped one of them before they both managed to escape at a local petrol station. Ivan was... turning page. There we go. Ivan was arrested that day and charged with rape and armed robbery. While awaiting trial, Ivan was involved in a string of robberies along with his brothers and would then go on to fake his own death by abandoning his shoes at the Gap, which was a renowned suicide spot in Sydney.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I just like the fact that the police didn't follow up on it.
No, they're just like, yeah, he definitely jumps by. That's so dark.
Yeah. I mean, despite the fact that, like, psychopaths wouldn't really commit suicide, but they were just like,
meh. No, they think far too highly of themselves.
It was then believed that Ivan ran to Queensland and Victoria, as well as flying out to New Zealand and living there for 2 years before flying back with a fake passport. He was eventually arrested after visiting his sick mother in hospital in 1974, but the case against him for robbery and kidnap failed due to help from family lawyer John Marsden. In 1975, Malat was working as a truck driver before taking a job at Roads and Traffic Authority, which would keep him on the road for 20 years. In 1977, he attempted, though unsuccessful, to rape and murder two more female hitchhikers, but he was never charged. I feel like every story I bring to this, it's like...
Yeah, we're back to our traditional theme of ineffectual police.
Yeah.
Just never following up ever.
Yeah. Like, there's so many murders where you're like, this really could have been prevented if the police just did their job.
Seriously.
Fast forward to 1989, which is a big jump...
Was he just not doing anything during that period, or is
going to be touching on that a bit later. Right. So fast forward to 1989 on the 30th of December, when 19-year-olds Deborah Everest and James Gibson left Melbourne and travelled to Sydney, where they left their hostel and planned to hitchhike to Albury. The day after they were last seen, a camera belonging to Gibson was found on a road in northern Sydney, with his empty backpack being found a month later in the same area. The couple's bodies were found in Belanglo State Forest. Why do Australians always have such hard names to... It's always like a Belangalo.
Well, they're probably all First Nations names, are they?
Okay, yeah, that was me. Yeah. Shut up, Ruby. Saz. Sorry.
Saz. Problematic babes. Saz.
So the couple's bodies were found in Belanglo State Forest 4 years later on 5th of October 1993 by a local man who had been looking for firewood. He brought police back to the site where the bodies were later identified as Everest and Gibson. Gibson had 8 stab wounds, including one that severed his upper spine, as well as injuries that punctured his heart and lungs. And Everest was shown to have been the victim of a brutal beating with skull fractures, a broken jaw and knife marks on her forehead, which for some reason really freaks me out.
That, yeah. Just like, oh.
Whenever I hear of, like, stabbings in the head, I'm like, ugh.
I have a really gross story.
Does it involve a stabbing in the head?
Yeah.
Go on then.
So I worked as a cleaner in St. James's a couple of summers for, like, locum work when I was in college. Paid real well. Mm. And I was doing surgeries at the time.
Yeah.
And there was a guy who had come in and he had been stabbed in the head with, like, a pocket knife. Like, right in the middle of his forehead. And the thing was, though, is he was fucking fine. It was just embedded in the bone. It wasn't like it hadn't gone through. Oh my God. Obviously they needed surgery to take it out and make sure there was no
damage
on the other side. But as far as they could tell, it hadn't like fully penetrated his skull. So he just and like basically one of the attendants came up to the staff room and was like, "You guys need to see this." And he was like, he was real cool about it. He was like, "Yeah, I know, right? I've got a knife in my head." But like, it was weird. It was wild.
Oh my god! Because like the amount of force that it takes to penetrate like
bone,
skull.
Like, yeah. You know what? I did not ask any questions. I did not ask how it happened. I do not know if it was an assault or someone was fucking about, or if was running with scissors, running with a penknife.
Tripped and headbutted it.
Because like that's kind of what I feel like the force required would be. I did not ask, so I do not know how he ended up in this situation, nor do I really care. But there you go. So I did actually see a person with a knife sticking out of their skull.
Crazy.
It was years ago.
On the 21st of January 1991, German hitchhiker Simone Schmiedel went to hitchhike from Sydney to Melbourne. To Melbourne.
Racist. kidding.
It's just because I've got all these, like, what do they call them? The, you know, how much a word is broken.
Syllables. Yeah.
Thank you. I've just got all these. I'm just going to add more syllables.
Yeah, I do.
So they hitchhiked from Sydney to Melbourne, where they were planning on meeting her mother, who was flying in from Germany, where they would then enjoy a camping holiday. On the 1st of November 1993, Simone's body was discovered in Belanglo State Forest during a police sweep along a fire trail. Simone had died after being inflicted with 8 stab wounds, including one which had severed her spinal column.
He was a big fan of that old spinal severance, wasn't he?
He was. So apparently when he was taking the machete to animals, he would always go for the spinal column. And then when, early on in his life, one of the robberies he was involved in with his brothers, he shot a man and it went through his spinal column and paralysed him. It didn't kill him, it just paralysed him. So I feel like this is where it's like coming from.
This is where it started, yeah.
Like for some reason he's got a kink for spinal column.
Yeah, so that's like paralysing people. That's awful. Yeah. Oh god.
And it's like that really horrible scene in Wolf Creek.
Yeah.
Where he like, yeah. German backpackers Gabor Neugebauer and Anya Habschied left their Sydney hostel on 26th of December 1991 to hitchhike to Adelaide and Darwin. On November the 4th, 1993, both of their bodies were found in a shallow grave in Belanglo, near to where the body of Schmiedel had been found, where it was discovered that Neugebauer had been tied up and shot 6 times, while his partner Anya had been decapitated, and her skull was never found.
Jesus.
Yep. On the 18th of April in 1992, British hitchhikers Joanne Waters and Caroline Clark, which I think the film is based on, disappeared on their way to Victoria when they stopped to ask directions to the Hume Highway. On 19th of September 1992, their bodies were found in Belanglo State Forest when 2 runners discovered the corpses while orienteering. Through dental records, the bodies were confirmed as Waters and Clark's. Joanne Waters had been stabbed 15 times, 4 times in the chest, 1 in the neck, and 9 times in the back, which would have definitely have paralysed her. Caroline Clark had been shot 10 times in the head, with police suspecting she may have been used as target practice.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Yeah. Forensics showed that the victims discovered had not died immediately from their injuries and were more than likely subjected to torture. After setting up a police task force and developed a profile of the killer that included link analysis technology to create a list of suspects that initially started out as a list of 230 and was then minimised to one of just 32. The notoriety of the unknown killer gained so much momentum that the New South Wales police were contacted by Paul Onions from the United Kingdom, whose information would prove to be a major breakthrough in the case and lead to the arrest of Ivan Milat. So on the 25th of January 1990, Paul Onions was a backpacker in Australia and whilst hitchhiking from Liverpool train station towards Mildura, had picked up a ride from a driver who identified himself as Bill. I just keep on thinking of
nice normal Bill.
Yeah, Blinky Bill, the koala.
Oh, yeah.
Less than a kilometre away from Belanglo, Bill pulled out a revolver and a rope and attempted to rob Onions. Onions made a run for it whilst Bill shot at him. Onions managed to stop a passing motorist and went to the Bowral police, where he gave a detailed description of his attacker. In 1994, New South Wales police refound Onions' statement and Ivan Milat became suspect number one. Again, they didn't go after him originally.
No, sure, why would you?
you know, just a crazy person.
Yeah, he's fine. He's just out there in the outback somewhere.
Yeah, like, I know it's vast, but I assume there's not a lot of people in the outback.
No, not like, or like there are people who do live in the outback, but they tend to be relatively concentrated. Yeah. Like, you wouldn't like find them spread out a lot.
Yeah.
I think I'm not I wouldn't be an expert now on outback populations, because there are First Nations tribes that do kind of exist in the outback, and there are mining towns that are in the middle of fucking nowhere.
Yeah, but I would have assumed it would have been quite easy to find like a gun wielding maniac in.
I mean, I think we always forget how fucking giant Australia is.
That's true, yeah. I'm just thinking of, like, a tiny village.
You know? Yeah, I know. That guy.
Everyone knows.
Yeah.
So Onions flew to Australia to help with the investigation, and in the meantime, police learned that Ivan had recently sold his vehicle after the discovery of the bodies of Clark and Waters, and they had also confirmed that on the days of the attacks, Milat had not showed up to work, and people that knew him told the police of his obsession with weapons. On May the 5th, 1994, Paul Onions positively ID'd Ivan Milat as the man who picked him up and attempted to kill him. Milat was arrested on May the 22nd, and through a search of his house, investigators discovered murder weapons that matched those used on the bodies found in Belanglo Forest, as well as several personal items that belonged to the victims. Ivan had also hidden victims' belongings at the residences of his mother and five of his brothers. Which I'm like, did none of them just go...
Yeah.
My brother's a psychopath, and he's hiding stuff.
Hiding stuff here in my home.
On the 23rd of May, Milat appeared in court but did not enter a plea. He was charged with the murders of the seven backpackers a few days later, and his committal hearing began on 24th of October and continued until the 12th of December, during which over 200 witnesses appeared.
200?
Yeah.
So there were 200 people that potentially knew that this guy was fucking mental and killing people.
Yeah. Yeah.
And none of them decided to go forward and be like, I think this guy might be a murderer?
Apparently not. Like, I'm thinking, is it like a small town thing where it's like, we don't tell, don't trust the police?
Or is it like one of those, is it like that, I can't remember what it's called, like that syndrome where people, you know, when people see a bad thing's happening, but no one, everyone just keeps walking.
Yeah.
Like that, but with a sociopath.
Yeah. So Milat's Supreme Court trial began on 26th of March 1996, and he was confident he would be found innocent despite all the evidence stacked against him. So he's got a bit of a Ted Bundy thing going on there.
Clearly, yeah.
Yeah. And because he sacked his lawyer, he was basically like, I'll do this myself.
Jesus Christ. Just the level of, like, you know what, though? I mean, do we aspire to be such a self-confident king?
No. No. Self-confident queen.
Yeah.
Not self-confident king.
I wish I had that level of self-confidence in myself. That level of belief. I would be paying paid so much more if I had that level of self-belief. Just walking into offices being like, give me more fucking money. No, I didn't kill that person.
It wasn't me.
It wasn't me. No, give me a raise.
So on the 27th of July, Milat was found guilty and given a life sentence on each count without the possibility of parole. He was also convicted of the attempted murder and false imprisonment of Onions, where he received 6 years for each count. Even when he went to prison, the madness didn't stop there.
Of course it didn't.
There were several incidents whilst Ivan was incarcerated, including a failed escape attempt. He cut his little finger off to force an appeal.
The absolute fuck.
Yes, he was like, if I cut my finger off, they have to give me a chance to appeal.
Where is that written down in the law?
He swallowed razor blades and staples, and he went on a 9-day hunger strike because they wouldn't give him a PlayStation.
I mean, that sounds like something that I would have done when I was 12. Like, I'm pretty sure I refused to eat my dinner when I didn't get a PlayStation. Jesus Christ. Who is this person? Where did he come from? I know you just told me at length, but...
He had a TV, because there was this big controversy in Australia, and people, like, protested against the fact that he had a TV.
Him specifically, or, ever, like, at all?
Him specifically, because... I mean, they shouldn't really be given...
Entertainment.
Yeah. Like, you don't get entertainment if you've killed a lot of people.
Probably not, no. I mean, I think, look, prison reform is a whole other episode.
Oh, absolutely, yeah. But I don't think that applies to people like Ivan.
Very possibly not, no. No, I think you're right.
Yeah. So, going back to that thing where we were like, there's a big jump between 1977 and 1989. Experts have commented on the fact that it's highly unusual for serial killers to start killing at such a late stage of their life. Milat was 45 in 1989, which is a job kept him on the road Three more unsolved murders are also thought to be attributed to Malat, including the disappearance of Karen Rowland on the 26th of February 1971, in which the next day... cat butt. Your cat's not here for this.
He's really not, is he? No. Sorry.
He heard about the animal cruelty and was like, no.
No. We will not discuss this man. Get his name out of your mouth.
In which the next day, Malat boasted to co-workers that he had murdered someone and buried their body in a bushland. Which I feel like a lot of these serial killers do.
And people are just like, yeah, okay. Yeah, sure, that crazy Ivan.
He's always coming up with mad things.
He's always claiming that he murdered people.
Like, there was just not enough true crime fans back in the day.
I know. And, like, that is a whole other, like, conversation as well. It's, like, the amount of, like... true crime, like the amount of posts that you see online, and you like someone's like, oh, my boyfriend was like, forgot to buy me a donut, and like in the comments it's like, red flag, get out now. You're like, all right, everyone needs to take a step back.
Sorry,
like, he will kill you. You're like, I mean, it's a red flag. If my partner came home without a fucking donut, I would.
That's just straight
a donut for him and not a donut for me, obviously. Like, just no donuts. Yeah. That's fine, but
So on the 13th of November 1987, 18-year-old Peter Letcher disappeared while hitchhiking, and his bones were discovered the following year by bushwalkers in the Jenalan forest. He had been shot 5 times in the head and repeatedly stabbed in the back. Malat's ex-wife, this is another thing serial killers do, okay? Malat's ex-wife told police Ivan had brought her to Jenalan forest a few days before Letcher's disappearance, and Letcher's murder took place shortly after Malat's wife left him. Like, you don't take people to your... or you don't take your bodies to places that you've brought your wife and be. And apparently it wasn't like, let's have a romantic time. It was like, look at this bushland. She was like, okay, bye.
Look at such wonderful brush. And she was like, I think this man is going to murder me. I got to leave. Now, that's a red flag.
Right? Like, if I...
oh God.
Then again, I say that, right? So when me and Oscar first started dating, we joke... there's forest behind our house. And we joke that we'd bring each other up there and kill each other and bury... but that's, you know, that's just crazy cats in love.
Yeah. Oh, well, like when my partner proposed to me, so he drove me out to a beach nearby, and there's like a wooden bridge that goes over from like the main road to like the island where the beach is, and it's like this rickety rackety wooden bridge, and there's no streetlights. And it was the middle of winter, so it was dark. It was only like 6 p.m, but it was dark. Mm-hmm. And it was because I love the beach. Like, that's why he was bringing me there. But we were driving into the darkness across this rickety wooden bridge, and he just turned and looked at me and went, I swear I'm not going to murder you. And I was like, well, it's either a murder or a proposal. These are my two options. I hope it's the second one.
Well, Oscar proposed in the Murder Woods to me, so...
See? It's a thing. It's a thing. So it's fine for us, but not for Ivan.
Yeah, definitely not. where am I? Yes, on the 6th of September 1991, 29-year-old mother Diane Panaccio informed her friends she planned on hitchhiking back from a motel. On the 13th of November, her body was discovered wrapped in pine branches by forestry commissioners in Talaganda State Forest. Her 7th thoracic vertebra had been stabbed, which would have caused paralysis, and her murder took place during Malat's known killing spree. So it's very likely that he also committed these murders as well. Oh, honey, no, I need this. I need these notes.
He loves to sit on paper, on laptops and various other things. I'm like, what can I do? What can I do for you? I know you just want attention,
Steve. He is thought to have been responsible for even more victims, and I'm going to read out their names because I think they kind of need to be named.
Yeah, I think that's important.
Including the disappearances of Leanne Goodall, Robin Hickey, Amanda Robinson, Amanda Zolas, Annette Briffer, Susan Eisenhood, Anita Cunningham, Robin Hoynville Bartram, Gabriel Yanka, Michelle Riley, Lydia Knotts, Narelle Mary Cox, Barbara Carol Brown, Stephen Lapthorne, Michelle Pope, Alan Martin Fix, Annika Adriansson, Tony Marie Cavanaugh, Kay Doherty, Kim Cherie Tier, Elaine Johnson, Carrie-Anne Joel, Deborah Balkan, Gillian Jameson, Joanne Lacey, Leslie David Toshack, Carmen Verheiden, Melanie Merrill Sutton, and Chad Everett Sutton. All of these people disappeared while travelling and hitchhiking in areas that Ivan Malat was known to frequent. Even though Malat had always said none of his family members had anything to do with the murders he was convicted of, in July of 2005, his former lawyer, James Marsden, who he had fired before his trial, claimed on his deathbed that Malat had been assisted in the killings of the two British backpackers by his sister Shirley, who had died in 2003.
You're going to have to cut out so many cat-related things. Like, because that's not, you know, once or twice as cute. Like, this is...
So that was the story of the most one of the most horrible people on earth. That's Robin Malat.
Like the even the suspected body count is huge, and like realistically, it's probably higher.
Yeah, and like he was known to have said when he was dying in prison, he was known to have said, "Oh, there's bodies you'll never find." So like you can guarantee that at least probably 90% of those.
Mm. It's like, it's insane though, like how many of them, like a lot of them were backpackers, or is it just the ones that we kind of were the more, don't get on that laptop, I swear to God. Was it just the people who were more, or the murders that were more prominent that were, they were backpackers and a lot of other people might have been kind of...
No, a lot of them were, like those names that I read out, they were all hitchhikers and backpackers, whether they like it was a mix of foreign backpackers and like people that were just hitchhiking in their hometown like to get back from a party.
Because like particularly the foreign backpackers, you'd think that like the just the sheer amount like people going missing, you'd think there would have been like a don't go to fucking backpack in Australia because you will disappear in the outback never to be seen again.
I wonder how much the backpacker tourism was affected when Wolf Creek came out.
I'd say it must have been.
Or even when like the whole story of Ivan Milat came out
back
in the day. I wonder if it was affected at all.
Like, what I want to know as well, so, like, when they started finding these bodies over a couple of years in the Belango Forest, did not a single cop be like, maybe we got a serial killer on our hands because we keep finding all these bodies that have been stabbed in the back?
Yeah.
Literally.
Yeah.
It keeps bing-bonging on my laptop.
Yeah. It's pretty nasty.
Yeah, and just like again, like the lack of follow up on so many reports, the lack of just being able to put things together, and like we talk about it in cases that are in the States a lot, and like the state, I mean, obviously the police forces in the States, aside from being awful, are, you know, notoriously bad for communicating with each other, and that's like a consequence of a variety of different things. It's not all necessarily like just their fault. But like this was all happening in the same place.
Yeah.
Well, sorry, not all of it, obviously, but like. Certainly this particular period that like the of those like seven people that was all happening in the same place. The bodies were turning up in the same place, and the cops didn't once be like, maybe we got a backstabber in our midst.
Like, I can understand that they're probably really inexperienced because it's like rural New South Wales outback, and they're probably like the worst they've ever had is probably Malat's brothers shoot in a few cans, like
very possibly and they wouldn't necessarily be, but I mean that it kind of makes it even worse to a point though because they'd be like, how are, like, you know, we're not, we don't usually get murders and now we have a whole bunch just a whole bunch of murders. What are we gonna do about it? Nothing, apparently. It just it just seems very surprising to me like how little follow-up there was from them. Like, that's pretty awful.
And there's even rumors that there may have been another serial killer operating either with Malat or like parallel to Malat. So it just makes me think, like, how many serial killers?
Like Wolf Creek, I know Malat was like the primary source.
There was another guy.
But there was another guy, wasn't there? Who did like similar. But it does seem to, like, God, I hate being like, oh, well, it totally makes sense to like murder backpackers in the outback because, but it kind of does. Like, they're sort of like, they're not with, like, they're not with people who will immediately, flag that they're
especially
missing,
especially in the days where there was no mobile phones.
Exactly. So like, you're not with people who will flag that you're missing straight off. You're like in a very isolated location, like, or easy access to like very isolated locations. So it is sort of serial killer heaven, really.
Yeah,
sort of just like a
Woodstock for serial killers.
Yeah, or like victim gashapon.
Yeah, so moral of the story is just don't go backpacking in Australia.
I will never do that because it's 2 inches from the surface of the sun and has giant spiders. Why would I go there?
See, I don't mind spiders so much. It's just...
I mean, I don't mind spiders at all, but the fucking size of the ones there. But also the fucking... Oh, they've got too many weird bugs. Too many things that can kill you. Like, I include the First Nations and people in this sentence. Mm-hmm. Why would anyone decide to stay there? Just go a few hours south to New Zealand. You're just like, oh, sheep. That's like the worst thing that you're going to come across. Like, no offense to any Australians out there, but your country is terrifying. quite frankly.
It's not the animals, it's the locals.
It's an entire country that's just like, you can't live in most of it because it's trying to kill, like, just the landscape is trying to kill you. Then it's got, like, all the terrifying bugs and all the terrifying sea life. It's cute animals try and punch you in the face. Why would you go there?
And don't all the koalas have, like, chlamydia or something?
Yes! They're all fucking, like, little horny STD bastards that'll try and claw your face off. It's terrible. The magpies will just attack you.
Oh, yeah, magpies are, like...
death from all directions.
Yes, yes. So we won't be travelling to Australia anytime.
No, so. They don't have as many fun haunted places to go to either, so... I mean, you can go if you like. I'd go to New Zealand. I'd love to go to New Zealand.
Yeah. I think I just have so many other places on my to-do list first. Yeah. But maybe one day.
One day.
So that was...
That was...
A bit of a bummer.
A bit of a bummer, that's happening. Yeah.
But look, listen.
Yeah.
Plenty of cat arse too.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, goodness. Yes. Haunted dolls and serial killers. That should be our other tagline.
Yeah. So don't forget, you can find us on social media at what_scream on Twitter and at whatascream on Instagram. And you can find Ruby at
The Ruby Noir, wherever you fancy finding me. Are you going to stay on X, as it's now going to be called?
On
Twitter.
Well, until Threads becomes available in Europe, which is a pain in the hole.
The only thing about Threads is that it's connected to your Instagram account. And if you don't want it, you have to, if you set it up and then... want to turn it off, you have to delete your Instagram. You can't just delete your Threads. So,
oh my god.
Just to be aware, you might need to start a separate Instagram page if you want to move over.
I have a billion. Anyway, so.
Yeah, that's true. I also have several.
And don't forget to rate, review, subscribe on whatever platform you are listening to us on.
Yeah. If there's any movie that you would like us to investigate the exciting true crime behind, let us know. Drop us a DM.
Sure, we may not listen to you.
But... oh no, very. It's a high possibility.
But we like to think you could be involved.
Yeah. I'm just trying to crowdsource ideas because I'm lazy. That's all.
Oh, I have a spreadsheet, so...
I mean, I have a spreadsheet as well, but it's finite.
Okay, thanks for listening.
Thanks, bye.
Bye.